Oh, email. Do we have the... Yeah, there's a... In the hall, there's a list of emails to put your email. And if you think you did it before, but you haven't been receiving anything in the last few weeks, do it again, because sometimes we can't make out the names, or I actually lost a group of the... trying to... It's always fun admitting that I lost a batch of names, so... that's there to stay connected. So, I hope you have your thinking caps on. No, it'll be good. Last week I gave a talk on why the tendency we have of adding, of taking all of our experiences personally, thinking, why is this happening to me? These are my thoughts. This is my life, this is what's going on to me, is actually an illusory habit that causes a lot of stress, because actually all of the important events in life and emotions happen universally to everyone. And it's that tendency to take things personally that causes so much stress. For instance, when we go through, we get fired, or perhaps we get dumped, or perhaps a friend says something unskillfully to us, we have a tendency to take that personally. And just thinking, why is this happening to me, adds so much more stress, mental agitation into the experience. I mean, it's painful enough alone to go through, to be laid off or to get dumped, but then adding the additional, well, this is only happening to me, or this is my event, that often makes... It's so much more difficult to work with the stresses in life. Tonight, we're going to talk about the worlds that we create. The Buddha said the mind loves to create sankhara worlds, which is L-O-K-A in the Pali that the Buddha taught in. He used lokas to refer to not just what we experience as the reality all around us right now, but also the daydreams that we inhabit, the stories about or memories of the past, and the worries and projections we have about the future. Well, of course, there's those which are not really based at all on reality, but then there's the times that we feel really present, and we like to think that I'm in reality. And the Buddha said, well, actually, this reality that we inhabit is actually largely fabricated. He said, what is the world that we live in? Well, it's a creation of the senses along with a creation of the mind. It's not just the senses that we have, it's our own mind that's filling it in. We fill it in not just with the perceptions and the sensations of the world, for instance, the sights or the sounds, but we also add in our previous experiences and expectations, our idea of who we are. So every world that each of us is living in is a different one. For example, if you have three women sitting at a party on a couch, and a man sits opposite them, one woman, the man might remind her of her violently drunk father. Another woman, he might remind her pleasantly of an actor that she's attracted to. A third woman might have absolutely no association with the man's face and attire whatsoever. So all three women are going to experience this person completely differently. Two of them, the first, that are either repelled or attracted, are going to focus more on the man and are going to, he's going to take up more of their experience. The third, who has no reaction, is not going to really look at him that much. They're going to look around at what's going on at the rest of the party. So each woman is, in fact, inhabiting a different world. They might think that they're all at the same party, but they actually are at three different parties. This is borne out by neuroscience. I'm going to read you something very, very brief. It's a summary from a book on neuroscience. But you'll see how similar it is to what the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago. I'm quoting a book by Rick Hansen, which is a book summarizing latest neuroscience research. Much of what you see, in quotes, out there is actually manufactured in here by your brain, painted in like computer-generated graphics in a movie. Only a small fraction of the inputs to your occipital lobe, that's where you process visual sensations, comes directly from the outside world. The rest comes from your memory stores and other perceptual processing modules. Your brain simulates the world. Each of us lives in a virtual reality that's similar enough to the real thing that we don't bump into the furniture. In other words, when you're looking at something, the eyes are darting around, and they're only actually seeing a very small amount of the whole visual field. In fact, a lot of the time, you don't realize this, but you're blind. I mean that literally, because there are times when the eye is moving so fast that it's not processing anything. It paints in the rest of the world based on its experiences of the past, the last time you've seen this room, what you expected this room to look like, what you've expected me to look like versus the way I've looked in the past. So it's always a mixture of what is happening now, what the Buddha called dhammas, the naked truth, and sankharas, fabrications made up of our expectations. The mind creates the world around us, stitching it together from expectations, things we've experienced in the past, and actual present sensations. So each of us is, at this time, is experiencing a different world. That's why you can be at an event with close friends that you might know for a long time. And somebody might experience the event as awful and painful, and the other person might be totally happy. It depends on what they've experienced in their past, what expectations they brought into the experience, what kind of day they've been having. All these external previous karmas are coming in, creating the world that we experience. So the Buddha went on. He said, because these worlds that we live in are so fabricated, so stitched together, so created, that they're constantly unstable. We want the worlds we live in, our apartments, our jobs, our favorite restaurants, dharmapunks. We want it to be safe and secure and stable. But he said, in fact, and I'll read you his quote, what we experience to be the world is disintegrating all the time. It's made up of sensations of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, and past karma. And so it is constantly changing despite our wishes otherwise. Pretty smart guy, that Buddha. So, it's constantly changing. One of the Buddha's famous teachings that is recited by monks is the world, I'll read you it, the world is swept away. It does not endure. In other words, the world is, that you're experiencing, because it's made up of so many expectations and past experiences and sensations that your mind is piecing together actively, that world is changing despite your desire for it to stay constant. The world offers no shelter. There's no one in charge. That's because, again, it's constantly new information's coming in despite our desire for the world of, made up of our perceptions and our expectations and our past. We want the world to be a certain way, but we're constantly receiving and creating the world differently than the way we want it to be. And the world, the information that's coming in is changing. It's a flux, a constant shift. And we feel we always want this world that we live in, our apartments, our homes, our jobs. We want them to be secure. But in fact, there's always something in them creeping in that we don't like. You might walk into a house and see something or smell an aroma or hear a sound that you don't like. It's sounds and sensations coming in, barging into your safe little secure space. And we're fighting to keep it the way we want it to be. But there is no way, the Buddha said, we can ever make our external worlds secure. The world that we inhabit is always changing beyond our control. Don't worry though. I've got a solution coming up. Funny thing about teaching the Dhamma is that the first half is always depressing as fuck. It's always the problem and then the solution. So you gotta wait through the problem and then the solution comes up. So anyway, the Buddha taught the world is swept away. It does not endure. The world offers no shelter. No one's in charge. In the world, there is nothing we can own. One passes on, leaving everything behind. I don't really need to explain that thing. Everything you think you own, eventually you're going to be separated from, no matter how much you try. I remember my dad was so proud of so many things that he had acquired, but when he got to the point where he gradually lost all of his ability to move and ability to look after himself, virtually one thing after another, he loved that gave his life, you know, the external things that he attached to, he became separated from. It's true for everybody. The things in the outside world that we attach to for security, eventually we are separated from. And then finally, because of all this, the fourth chant that the monks make is, the world is insufficient, insatiable, and a slave to craving. In other words, you get it. What we're trying to seek from it tilts, filters, changes the world, and at the same time, though the world is never enough. I love that story I tell a lot of Ringo Starr, who in 1967 said that he had more money and more drugs and more sex than he could possibly ever imagine. He was a multimillionaire, and still it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. He still felt empty. He still felt not good enough. Even in 1967, when the Beatles had released Sgt. Pepper's and they were set for the rest of their lives, it still, the world wasn't enough to fill that emptiness. So we bring craving to the world. We try to fill up our worlds with so many things and so many stuff we order and buy and acquire, and still there's this feeling in the body and in the mind that it's not enough. So, again, I want to say a couple of things. These are just statements about the worlds we create. The Buddha never, ever teaches anything about the real world outside there beyond our perceptions of it. The Buddha he was not a scientist in that sense. He did not make ontologically, empirically, objective statements about the world beyond your experience. Everything the Buddha taught was about the way we filter, change, create the world, and create our experience. The Buddha said we can never get past that filter, that subjectiveness of our experience. There is no way to get to the real thing out there. He had a word for it, tathāta, which meant he didn't want us to think like some 19th century philosophers taught that there is no outside reality. The Buddha never taught that. He said, yeah, there is a world. If you walk in front of what you think is a car, you probably will get hit. The perception of it will be different for each person if they did the exact same. But you will be hit. It's called tathāta and simply means there is something out there, but you can never get to the real objective truth of it. Everybody lives in a subjective experience of the world. Now, given that this is the case, that it's unsatisfactory, it's changing, that there's nothing that we can really own, what's the solution? Well, there is what the Buddha taught the Brahma Viharas, which are the divine abodes, if the world, LOKA, is unsatisfactory and changing, that might be true, but there is an alternative. The Buddha said we can build dwelling places for the mind where we are in fact safe, where we are in fact secure, where we are in fact, we can find inner peace. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that means about living in the world. But first, the four states of the Brahma Viharas are starting from a place of goodwill, wishing ourselves happiness and all beings happiness, compassion, which is empathy for ourselves and for other beings, wishing that we would be free of stress and that they would find a way, all beings will find a way free of stress, cultivating the thought of appreciation of our successes and the successes of others. And four is equanimity, reflecting on the fact that everything we're experiencing is a result of our own actions, and everything that everybody else is experiencing is largely the result of their actions. So we can dwell on these reflection points and use them to build an incredibly safe place inside. Now, once we've, through concentration, developed these themes of peacefulness, using the breath and reflecting on, for instance, appreciation of our skillfulness and the skillfulness of others, once we've got a very strong foundation, then the teaching is to allow the external events of the world to come in one by one and address them appropriately. For example, so many of the urgent issues of our lives have been going on for years and years and years. For example, I am an artist, but I have to work at a shitty job to pay the rent. What am I to do? This conundrum has followed me for decades. And so I've discovered that before addressing it, I can safely put it down and work on relaxing the body, making myself comfortable. And then I can look at this issue and see, really, has this issue ever brought me any peace? Has it really, do I really need an answer for it? Haven't I been both working and creating for so many years? Is this really the pressing debate that it needs to be? Now, there are other times in life where there really are urgent events going on in the world around us. And the good news is that we address them even more effectively than if we're constantly externally focused, believing that everything that we experience is objectively true and that we really know, as opposed to everybody else, what's going on. When we let go of that fantasy, we relax the body, create an internal experience which is calm from within. Then when a friend needs help, then when there's a crisis at our job, then when there's an alarming situation, an asteroid is about to hit the Earth and there's 12 minutes left to live, or whatever. Whatever. Then we can address those things with concentration and with focus. On the other hand, when we've been scattered about trying to address every single story in our lives, oh, I've got to do this for work, but I've got this friend who wants me to call, but I've got to accomplish this, but I forgot to do my exercise. When we carry around all those stories, then when an urgent situation happens, do we give it our full attention? No. We come at the urgent situations in life from a place of anxiety, stress, oh my God, I've got to fit this in. We never give the real issues of our lives the real attention that's due them. This practice is about, at first, during your meditation, dropping the world, getting the body, the mind peaceful, and then when you return to the world, while you keep part of your awareness on, for example, thinking thoughts of, may I be peaceful, may I be free of stress, and using the breath, then when you see something that requires your attention, your boss needs you, somebody at work is unhappy, this person doesn't like the other thing, the fourth person has an alarming situation, whatever. You can address them one by one and let them in, seeing which issues are really urgent and which issues are just dramas that don't really need to be addressed. It's a little bit like my favorite teacher, Ajahn Jeff, uses the analogy of a judge. There's a lot of places in the world where judges or policemen are very underpaid, extremely underpaid, and so there's a tendency maybe sometimes for them to take bribes or to make decisions based on other criteria than what they consider to be the truth. If, however, a judge is fairly reimbursed and is comfortable and has no need to, doesn't feel like he's living without, right, the judge would probably be a little bit more objective. It's just an analogy. I'm sure in reality it's probably not true, if there was a reality for it to be true in, but anyway. But you get the idea. If the mind is relaxed and not coming from a place of feeling stressed out, if the body's not stressed, if the mind is relaxed, then it judges each external thing asking for our attention adequately. But if the mind actually has all this underlying physical stress, if it's been carrying all these stories and dramas around in it, then it's going to greet a new situation with a sense of frustration and, ha, one more thing I've got to carry on my shoulders. Not only do I have to pay the rent this month, not only do I have to pay the bills, not only do I have to show up for work, but I also got to deal with this friend's crisis? What the fuck? So you get the idea. The idea is to not put our heads in the sand, to not hide away in the body, but in fact to develop peace so that we can in fact live in our version of the world in a really effective way. When you're peaceful inside, and when you've got a calm breath and body, then from that vantage point, you can address everything else. This, by the way, for those of you who are very advanced Buddhists, far along the path of enlightenment, there's a famous teaching that confuses a lot of people. The Buddha said that right before we become enlightened, we reside in a place of neither perception nor non-perception. What does that mean? This has thrown a wrinkle into a lot of Buddhist students' understanding of the advanced teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha is simply saying that when we finally become really peaceful, we no longer need to create a sense of an entire world around us. We instead reside peacefully in the body, and we address each issue, but we don't make statements about the entire world. When we live in these worlds that we've created, are these lokas, the Buddha said, when we live entirely externally, we then develop something he said called dittis, D-I-T-T-H-I. That is views and opinions about the world. And we all have them. We carry around these ideas, well, the world should be this way. And isn't it amazing that I went to the hospital and I sat there and it took twice as long as it should have because I should immediately have been paid attention to, or I should immediately receive this kind of courtesy, and when I go into a subway, immediately nobody should stand in the doorways. And when I stand watching a little old lady, immediately younger people should get up and allow her to have a seat. And my boss really shouldn't act the way he does, and this shouldn't happen, and that shouldn't happen. this is because we're overbalanced. We carry around all these views and opinions, and the one thing about ditties, the Buddha said, is that they are dukkha, they are suffering, they are stress waiting to happen. Our expectations about the way the world should be are nothing other than planned resentments and suffering. So the way to get around that is to let go of this idea that we really, really know the objective world, and just understand that what we're living in is largely a subjective experience that we are creating. And instead, to come at it from a place of, I'm going to develop peace in my life and address each issue peacefully, one by one, without thinking I'm the one who knows the real truth about what's out there. So that's my heavy talk. Next week I'm going to be a lot lighter and talk about specific ways of dealing with stresses and obsessions. But tonight I thought I'd lay a heavy one on you because it's a snowstorm, give you something good to ponder while you're stuck inside. What the fuck was he talking about? So I thank you for...